We'll call this meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:31 p.m. on Thursday, February 2nd, 2023. Present this afternoon are Vice Chair Klayman, Senator Bjorkman, Senator Merrick has an excused absence, and myself, Senator Kawasaki. Before we start, please silence your cell phones. I want to remind members and testifiers that all questions and comments must be directed through the chair. And before testifying, please clearly state your name, title, and affiliation for the record. With us today from Senate Records is Carrie Cooper-Ryder. Welcome. And with us from the Legislative Information Office is the moderator, Zach Lawhorn. The purpose of today's meeting is to hear Senate Bill 12, an act relating to confidentiality of information relating to the duties of the Department of Administration, creating an address confidentiality program, and providing for an effective date. We plan on hearing Senate Bill 12 today and setting the bill aside for further comments. We have today to speak for the bill, the sponsor, Senator Jesse Keel, and Senator Keel's staff, Ms. Ella Atkinson. After that, we have some short invited testimony in support of the bill. And if it pleases the committee, we'll also leave some of the public testimony open for a future meeting as well. Without further ado, Senator Keel and Ms. Atkinson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Gesundheit. It is a pleasure to be with you today, and it turns out the Belch room, not the Butrovich room. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 12 today. Senate Bill 12 creates an address protection program, primarily for survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking crimes. The program will also serve peace officers in Alaska and correctional officers. Alaska is one of only a few states, handful of states, that do not already have an address protection program. The purpose of a program like this is to allow someone who faces serious threats to their life and safety and that of their family to participate nevertheless fully in our public life, in things like voting, in being able to register a vehicle, in doing other things that would create a public record with their address, but without in fact exposing them to their abusers, their stalkers, or someone who might seek retribution on them for doing their job, and thus imperiling the individual or their family. Mr. Chairman, the story that prompted my initial looking into this bill was told by a former colleague who had worked in victim services here in Alaska. She talked of someone who had gotten out of a life-threatening situation, domestic violence situation, and moved to the Anchorage Bowl, had gotten a P.O. box, and had done things like register to vote. She was very fortunate one day going to her post office that she spotted her former abuser in his car outside the post office before the abuser spotted her. She had left her previous state of residence to move to Alaska in safety, but her former abuser had found her and was waiting outside the post office to find, presumably, either where she lived or worked. Mr. Chairman, nobody should have to go through that just to cast their ballot. And while an individual under current law can keep their home address private, there must be a mailing address that is part of the public record. So, what Senate Bill 12 does is create an address protection program. It places the program in the Department of Administration, which already has some mail services to which these can be somewhat more efficiently appended, although it is a new program. Anyone who is a peace officer in Alaska, who's a correctional officer, or who has a protective order can register, can confidentially give their actual mailing address to the program. The program gives them a P.O. box that's checked by a state employee. And that state employee will forward that individual's first-class mail to them confidentially and securely. In that way, a person can register a car and not worry about someone going to the DMV and filling out the form to get their actual mailing address the way you or I could if someone had parked a car on our property. We were looking to tell them to get it off or use any of the other tools. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to take questions about the bill. I think that this is a difficult time to consider new state programs. It is. But this one's really important. This one is about protecting people's lives, protecting people's families. With that, I'm happy to take questions and have my staff go through an analysis of the bill or whatever the committee would like.
Let's see. Do we have any immediate questions for Senator Keel before we hear a brief sectional analysis? Okay. All right. I guess we have Ms. Atkinson here on behalf of Senator Keel's office. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ella Atkinson, staff to Senator Keel. Section 1 gives peace officers and correctional officers enrolled in the program protections in court for their safety. Section 2 makes home addresses and phone numbers of peace officers and correctional officers enrolled in the program confidential in court documents and requires redaction before release. Section 3 protects the home address and phone numbers of peace officers and correctional officers enrolled in the program in open court and generally prevents them from being placed in court files unless ordered by the court. Section 4 defines correctional officer using the same language as AS 18.65.290, which is a chapter regarding police protection. Section 5 puts the program in the Department of Administration. Section 6 creates the program, requires a single post office box for enrollees to use as a substitute mailing address and for mail forwarding purposes, requires enrollees' real addresses be kept confidential, and describes program eligibility, requires state and municipal agencies to accept the PO box and describes the five-year eligibility period, forbids the department from charging a fee, allows access to confidential addresses subject to a search warrant, establishes penalties for unlawfully revealing a protected individual's address. Section 7 establishes a transition period for the department to adopt regulations to implement the program. Section 8 lets the department begin its regulation process immediately. And Section 9 sets an effective date of January 1st, 2024 for the rest of the bill. Thank you.
Great. Are there any questions for Ms. Atkinson about the sectional?
I have a couple of questions.
Senator Klayman.
You often decide the answers. First on page 4, there's reference to a protective order under Title 13, subsection, or Title Chapter 26. I'm not immediately familiar with what that is because it doesn't sound like the criminal code or the criminal. What's Title 13 and what kind of protective orders are those?
Mr. Chairman, I may have neglected to put myself on the record when I first began. Jesse Keel, Senator for Senate District B. In answer to Senator Klayman's question, we're happy to provide the surrounding relevant statutes to the committee, but these are the same protective orders we think of in domestic violence cases. In talking with the court system, the court system's legislative person suggested that these are a good, or rather, these are a relatively uniform type of order. This type of order exists all across the nation. They're all pretty similar, and the folks running this program could get one from Arizona or Alabama or any other state and know just what they're looking at.
And then the other query. Sounds like part of the idea is that if I were to register for this program, assuming I'm qualified, I may or may not be, but a person that was qualified, you register and then the state now has an address. The state has a place where somebody needs to send mail to them. It goes to the state and then the state delivers it to the person.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly the notion. And we leave significant flexibility to the department to define exactly how that works in regulation. Among the things we would expect is that they would probably only forward first-class mail so that this doesn't become a system where the state has to pay to send catalogs forward and junk mail or heaven forbid, my campaign mailers. Nobody needs those.
So this is actually, that function doesn't happen. It isn't occurring today. The mail forwarding function isn't, there's not an existing program today in Department of Administration.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Klayman is correct.
And I think the last question I had, it looks like in Section 1, the current statute only protects victims and witnesses to a charged crime. You're expanding this to a larger scope in terms of domestic violence protective orders and other things that actually are non-criminal matters, but people would still be able to request and get this protection.
Mr. Chairman, that is also correct. The frequency with which a peace officer or a correctional officer's address will come up in court is probably quite low. Certainly, when a police officer is the arresting officer, for instance, the address is going to be the police station, right? This section won't come into effect. This is only a protection for the home address or personal home information, which in the course of their duties, if a correctional officer, you know, if a crime was committed within a facility, in the course of their duties, that's going to be their work address. And so this won't have any effect there.
And then I hope the last one. One of the easiest places to find people's addresses is to go to the borough of Juneau and look at their property records, or the municipality of Anchorage, look at property ownership records. Will this law impact what the municipality of Anchorage does or doesn't do with regard to addresses that are listed in their property?
Mr. Chairman, it will not affect what the municipality of Anchorage does, because the municipality of Anchorage has already passed a local ordinance to pull on the request of a victim of violent crime, I think it's all violent crimes in their case, that address off their publicly available record. Certainly the website won't reveal it. And certainly the property owner can provide this address protection program address for getting their mail, for getting their property tax statement, for instance.
What about Juneau?
Mr. Chairman,
that doesn't really answer the question about the impact of the statute, because the statute, it sounds like the statute's neutral on what local governments do. Anchorage has chosen to do something, but does this create a duty on local governments to do something that they may or may not choose to do?
Mr. Chairman, the bill currently requires the municipality to accept that address protection address as the individual's mailing address. But as written, it's not currently a duty on every municipality to purge their tax records without further request. Certainly, a person would need to come in, and municipalities retain that ability to do that. I don't think it's been proposed to most. And the primary reason for that is probably that the folks who will make use of a program like this are folks who genuinely are in current fear for their life and safety. It will not be a program that appeals to everyone who ever had an incident. Those folks often have picked up and left one city and moved to another, left one state and moved to another. And if they're concerned enough, they may actually resort to using a trust to purchase property so that their name doesn't appear at the recorder's office as the owner, and in which case they have that available to them for property ownership records. That's an extra step I can't shortcut with this bill, because the recorder's office has to actually list a physical location. But that provides some protection as well to those folks already.
Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Klayman. I did have a question sort of similar along those lines regarding municipalities and other government entities, so school districts. If they're a VPSO, if they're a clerk that works in the correctional institution but not otherwise a deputized correctional officer, those types of things. Are those people also part of the mix, and would a school district, for instance, have to also adhere to the rule of not allowing that sort of information to be public?
Mr. Chairman, school districts will be required to accept this address as the mailing address for a student. You will see throughout the bill that we do apply this to household members of the person protected by a protective order, or at least immediate family members. And then you will note that the correctional officer language, again, copied from elsewhere in statute, includes a person employed in a correctional facility in the state.
Thank you. What's the other further questions at this point for either Ms. Atkinson or Senator Keel? Okay, let's see. I do believe there's also a couple folks who are online for public and for public testimony. And we also have one person, it looks like, who might be in the room for public testimony as well. So let's see. At this time, I'll open it up first to invited testimony. It sounds like there's somebody online. We have Ms. Jody Roussaw, the business agent from the Alaska Correctional Officers Association. Welcome to the committee. State your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jody Roussaw, and I am a business agent for the Alaska Correctional Officers Association, and I am calling to express our support for SB 12. As you can imagine, in the nature of their work, correctional officers receive threats to themselves and to their families fairly frequently. It is also important to recognize that inmates seek officers' personal information for a variety of reasons that include malice, but it may be that inmates seek information for simply the status and cachet that it provides among inmates and to trade that information to other inmates. An officer's address and phone number is valuable, and they do testify in court, often related to work, but sometimes not related to work. So gaining access to that officer's address and phone numbers can easily be used to obtain, but also to obtain more personal information. As you know, correctional officers put their lives on the line every day for the safety and security of all residents of the state of Alaska. Our correctional officers work very long days in extremely difficult environment. Officers will always be burdened with the worry of safety of their family, but perhaps SB 12 provides a measure of relief. I do not know the percentage of our officers that will choose to participate and enroll in the program, but having that option available provides invaluable peace of mind. That's why we at the Alaska Correctional Officers Association fully supports this legislation, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm happy to take any questions that you may have.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Roussaw. Are there any questions for Jody Roussaw of the Alaska Correctional Officers Association? It doesn't look like there's any questions here online. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Next have somebody in the room, Brenda Stanfield, here for public testimony. Great. All right. And if you could just state your name and affiliation for the record. Thanks for being here.
Brenda Stanfield. I'm with the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and thank you for this chance to talk about SB 12. So we wanted to express our support of the state of Alaska creating an address confidentiality program. As you heard, there's a handful of states. Actually, there are six states. We are one of those, and three territories that do not have an address confidentiality program at this time that can be accessed for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. This week I was in a training with the Child Support Enforcement Division, and one of the things they were talking about is that if the non-custodial parent requests the address of the custodial parent, they send out a mailer, and if they don't receive any information back, they give that address out. And I was like, whoa, this kind of plays right into what we're talking about with needing an address confidentiality system. This is always an opportunity for me to update you on some statistics, because as we know, Alaska is not going in the right direction right now. For the last 10 years, we've been in the top two of deaths of women at the hands of men. And last year in 2020, which was the last time the Violence Policy Center did this, we were again number one. We were over two times the national average. Alaska Native women are four times the national average. And 25% of these murders involve a firearm, which means they have to get close enough to murder them without a firearm. It means they're knowing where, they're finding out where they live. They're finding out where they're at. So I know that I don't have to share with you that we don't have enough law enforcement. And oftentimes in our rural areas, there's no one to come to their aid. So if someone finds out where they live and can get out there, or maybe they're in that community, oftentimes there's no one to call for help. So even though we have shelter programs throughout the state, we have to be able to get them to a shelter program. From a rural community, oftentimes that means a plane ride, a boat ride, or a very long trip on maybe non-existing transportation that you don't have down a road that may be closed because of snow. So there's a lot of challenges for individuals who are living in our rural communities if someone finds out where they live. We also know that stalking is the most prevalent form of surveillance used by abusers. Abusers who stalk prior partners do so on average of 2.2 years. That's twice the normal time that a stalker stalks someone. Someone who's not abusing, it's a stranger stalking, about a year they lose interest, I guess. But in abusive situations, they tend to do that longer period of time. And this is just a way to make sure that the victim is still living in fear and allowing the abuser to continue to exercise control. So we just feel that creating an address confidentiality program that victims could enroll in would allow victims to control who is able to find out where they're located. A victim who chooses to move out of Anchorage into Nalato could use the address confidentiality PO box to ensure that no one could find out where they moved. We believe creating an address confidentiality program would be another tool we could give to victims to allow them to stay safe and alive. So thank you for being willing to work on this important piece of legislation.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Stanfill. Are there questions of Ms. Stanfill at this point?
Have any questions? Brenda, thank you again for your continued advocacy on these important things to Alaska. And glad to see you back in the Capitol this year.
Thank you. Okay, let's see. is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify at this time? Or is there anybody else online who'd like to testify? Doesn't look like it. Okay. So at this time, I'll close public testimony, but we will potentially reopen public testimony at a future hearing.